clock is, but not me. Yeah, one of those analog watches. Okay. All right, well, I think, another ending number. Okay, bring the meeting to order. And first thing we'll do, I have to just go around the room. Introduce us, why don't we start with you, like a guest?
My name's Karen Mead, I live in Stokana, and I was just interested because that's something up to me from next door.
Karen, what's your last name?
It's Mead, it's W-I-E-D.
W-I-D?
W-I-E-D, sorry.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Jeff Groot, TAB member.
Rich Faith, TAB chair.
Kirk Larson, member.
Clark Ide, assistant city engineer.
Eric Layers, public works director and city engineer.
Greg DiLoreto, TAB member.
Kevin Garrish, TAB member.
Tom Royce, TAB member.
All right.
Online.
Oh. Okay, those that are tuning in digitally. What else we got? Chris and Matt.
I think it's just them two. Chris is, looks like he might have froze up again. Chris is in our planning department.
Okay.
And Matt, here's Matt.
Okay.
I'm still here, I'm just having a little bit of connectivity issues, so I might hang out off screen until we get going.
And Matt is with Hilton?
Matt Bell, I'm a transportation planner, I'm with Kittleson and Associates, here today to provide you guys with a quick presentation on pedestrian prioritization.
Excellent. And Chris, why don't you introduce yourself real quick, now that we see your face here. You can hear us. Okay. And Mary has just joined us. Can you hear us, Mary?
I can. Am I muted? Oh, no, I'm not. Okay. Yes.
All right. And quickly introduce yourself for those who may not remember.
Sorry. Mary Baumgartner, council liaison.
Okay. Morgan is not participating in the meeting, right?
No.
I think we captured everybody now,
right?
Okay. So then our first order of business would be review and approval of the June 2024 summary notes. Before we do that, can I just raise a question? There's a new name there that maybe I missed it, but we have a member, Jake Riddens. Was that announced to us? I don't even recall hearing that. Does anyone know Jake?
No. That doesn't sound familiar.
He's listed here as a member absent. Jake Riddens. I'm not sure which how it's pronounced. But totally unfamiliar with.
I'd have to go back and check my email. I feel like we do have a new,
it's 87.
We do have a new member.
Right. We did have a resignation.
Turner?
We did have one resignation a few months back.
Yes.
So anyway, just so I'm clear, this Jake is indeed a member of this board now.
Hang on, I'll load it in.
Let's go with two for two graphs.
That's what you call them up, ladies. Well, I don't have any information about the fellas.
Sound like a gentleman job, dude.
I do like to know who's on.
That's what the website has.
Yeah, there he is.
I showed that he was appointed in April.
Okay. If it was announced to us, I slept to it. I don't recall that. But that's fine. No harm done. Okay, with that clarified then. Let's go back to the motion to approve the summary notes from Rick. Is there a second? Tom, okay. Been moved to second in to approve it. Any comments, corrections, or anything about the minutes? If none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries and the summary notes are approved. Okay, our second topic here is public comment. So this would be the appropriate time, Karen, if you had any questions. No, you just want to observe?
I want to observe.
That's fascinated by us.
Where are these clueless people?
She's a good answer.
Okay, let's see. No one up there, I would take it to be just a member of the general public that would. Okay. All right, with that, let's move on. Our next order of business is the sidewalk infill prioritization. Although you did say that Chris aren't going to actually highway.
You're looking at it.
I am. Okay, mine is big. That might have helped me. I do. So, okay, public comment. Business, Highway 43 vision plan staff update. There we go.
That's right. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting some, it's a little weird on my side, but hopefully it works and we'll be good.
Me too. The sound is challenging.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll start. If there's a problem, I can always, start over or whatnot. We'll figure it out. So my name's Chris Myers. Thank you for having me. I'm a city planner for the city of West Lynn, and I'm the project manager for Vision 43. So that's our, it's a roughly 2 year long project. We're about 8 months into it. We're mainly focusing on community engagement at this time. What the essence of the project is to create, a community vision for the Highway 43 corridor from the West Lynn Lake Oswego border south to the I-205 overpass. That's generally our north-south boundary. And we don't really have an east-west boundary yet. As we work through the project, we'll start to narrow in on where the sides of the corridor will be. Since this is the Transportation Advisory Board, some of the stuff I'm just going to cut to the chase on. I know we're limited on time. The reality is we're looking at the land uses adjacent to the corridor itself. We're also looking at connectivity between the neighborhoods adjacent to the corridor, sort of how people can and will move about near Highway 43. Oh, everyone went off my screen. Are we still okay?
We're good.
Okay, sorry, I just kind of went blank for a second, so just winging it. I'm only on a city laptop connected to the city system, but whatever. So anyway, what I will emphasize that what we aren't doing is this is not about the infrastructure of the physical highway itself. There are a few components that we are hearing from the community that they would like. Things like more crosswalks, signalized crosswalks, as well as pedestrian refuge islands and things of that nature. So those are, I guess, technically infrastructure, but in reality, and so that may be a part of the project as we move forward or will be. But we are working on those land uses. What do we allow and what don't we allow? The reality of it is if we don't look at changing some of our city codes, the way we act and interact on Highway 43 won't change. It's very strip mall and auto centric. And our codes really limit what developers or property owners can do on those properties. And kind of what we see is about what we're going to get unless we dig in and make some changes. So these last 8 months and for at least the next 4, it'll actually go more than that. I'm really out just engaging with the community, working with city council and the planning commission, trying to hone in on what the community's vision for the Highway 43 corridor is. We anticipate the entire project should wrap up about October of 2025. Early in 2025, actually, curiously enough, he's here. Matt Bell with Kittleson will be performing, or someone at Kittleson, I think it's Matt, will be performing a transportation analysis of the corridor. And I believe in part, it's to take the community's vision and what we're being told and analyze what that may and may not do to the transportation and traffic of Highway 43. We'll also be doing a tax increment financing feasibility study, starting in, I believe, February of 25. And then there will be another big part of the project in 2025 will be a mixed use zoning code, that our current, consultant MIG, they will write a new zoning code for us, and that will incorporate the community's desires and needs. So one of the things that I'd like to stress, is what we're really hearing, is that, and Councilor Baumgartner was kind enough to go on a tour with us a while back. She can, add to this, but what we're really hearing is the community does want to see change. They want sort of a there instead of just a pass through highway. The community is looking for, a better place to engage and enjoy our community along Highway 43. So we're hearing about open spaces that are functional, more crosswalks to get from one point to another. Our own mayor has recently moved and has been discussing how he's about, more than a half a mile away from the nearest crosswalk if he wants to cross safely on the highway. Let's see, crosswalks. Oh, and then another couple of issues that are bubbling up are design standards. We're hearing a lot of comments that, you know, people really like to enjoy some of the development in Lake Oswego along, West A and Highway 43, the Millennium Park Weiser blocks. That right now would be very difficult, for someone here in Westland to accomplish, a developer. We're hearing that parking, maybe not a sea of parking along the highway, is not necessarily desirable. So we're starting to talk about design standards and whatnot. So that's a very quick and very broad scope overview. What I will say is where we're at right now is we've been a part of about 28 community events. And I think I have another 12 or 13 scheduled in the next 4 months or so. And we are about, I meet tomorrow with our consultant where we'll see the first draft of some renderings. So what MIG is doing, that their rendering labs are basically taking what the community's been telling us so far and adapting that and visualizing that on sections of Highway 43 so that people can understand this desire will create this kind of an outcome. So we'll get a first look at our visualizations, and those will go out to the public sometime in probably late September, early October. So that's sort of the next big step that we have amongst many other engagement processes. I'll be updating Planning Commission next week, and I believe City Council a few weeks later, because there was a meeting canceled next week. Next week's council meeting was canceled. So yeah, that's the essence of the project. It's land use and connectivity along the highway corridor, and what do we allow? And that's where we're at right now. I hope that made sense. I kind of raced through that. Any questions or want me to expand on anything?
No, but Chris, this is Greg Dealer. I'm curious where ODOT is playing in this, because whatever we do, got to get their approval, whether it's, you know, whatever we do, basically.
So, Greg, I'm glad you asked. That's a good question. So, there's a couple of things I again, in my speed, neglected to mention. One is we do have a community working group that's 13 community members. We'll be meeting for our third time next month. And we are just in the process of setting up our technical advisory group, and that's where ODOT comes in. So we'll have a representative from ODOT Region 1, Clackamas County, Lake Oswego, Oregon City, Metro, TriMet, you know, all the big agency players. And we'll be able to start working through some of the process with our agency friends as well. But just to highlight, yes, any physical change we want to make to the highway, like added crosswalks or refuge islands, those would clearly need to go through ODOT. But the land uses along the corridor and in the neighborhoods, ODOT has nothing to do with those. Those are us. We can control those, and we do control those. And so the majority of the project is actually not really, I mean, I say this flippantly, not really ODOT's business. It is, and we want to be good partners and good friends. But adjusting zoning codes and height limits and whatnot is not something that, technically speaking, ODOT gets to control for us.
Yeah, I was more concerned about access control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. The ability to make these uses happen and the ability to get access, you know, on and off, you know, is there. fortunately.
Yeah, and that'll be some of those technical questions we talk about during the technical advisory group meetings, which we have 5 tentatively scheduled through to the end of through the end of next summer. So they'll be weighing in on those. And I guess that also brings up one other good point. You know, really, we're looking at a project that won't actually end. This is sort of an adjustment of how we use and act around and in Highway 43 that will last until it's changed. Lake Oswego's changes, their visioning document, Councilor Baumgartner probably remembers Sid talking about this when we did our tour. They originally started that visioning document in 1986, and they wrapped up construction for the main part about, what, 5 years ago? So it was a 35 to 40 year process to get where they are right now. And now they're moving forward. It's been so successful with other blocks moving north. So the point is, you know, nothing will change tomorrow. I guarantee it, nothing. And maybe not even for 5 years. But over time, we're going to open, or we're trying to allow that creativity and allow better things to happen on the highway as we grow as a city. So this is really looking forward a long ways. But no, you are right. ODOT has a lot of say in how and where we access the roads, and hopefully we can all be good partners in those discussions.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I have a question. Do you anticipate that there will be new zoning applied within the corridor, or simply an overlay for the Highway 43 corridor? How do you think that's going to play out?
Yeah, we anticipate an entirely new zoning code, but not for the entire corridor. As we've had conversations with, I think Matt's even been in the room with Kittleson, and when we did a tour with our consultants, we don't want to dilute the product. So we're really looking at 4 nodes along the corridor where we'll emphasize new zoning codes for those sections of the corridor. And then keeping in mind that even if you have a property that were to get rezoned, you can continue to use it just as you do in perpetuity. There's no requirement to change the use. All we're doing is opening up the possibility for future uses if you were to sell the property or whatnot. So no one's going to be forced to do anything. In fact, most people, if you know, might buy a property after we've changed the zone and they'd never know. So it's really just opening up the possibility of future development.
Sorry.
That's good stuff. For the end of next year timeline, is the goal to have kind of a plan developed or to have codes adjusted and new zoning space?
Yeah, so the first part, it will be an approved community, you know, vision and document that will go through City Council. They're the final approval authority. And then as part of that, we'll be making the changes to the zoning code at the same time. You can move through that process concurrently to save some time. So yeah, that's our hope. That's the plan. We are on target as far as time. And slightly ahead of budget, if you can believe that, but I shouldn't even say that because by tomorrow, you know, it won't be true anymore. But yeah, that's the plan, is to move forward with those changes. But again, this is going to be, I was adding up our community touch points or contact points so far. And excuse me, we have about 30,000 points of contact so far in the first 8 months of our engagement process. So my goal was to reach as many community members as possible. That's business owners, people who live here, people who are employed here. We're trying to reach as many people as possible. So we feel confident that when we get to the end, we will have a true community document, a community vision that hopefully will move through the process smoothly.
Yeah, one more question. I've heard it mentioned that ODOT would like to unload the maintenance of this Highway 43 to the other entities like the cities, right? Is there any scenario where that may come about, or is that being talked about at all to give us more control over that corridor?
Yeah, it's a good question. I know over the years that has come up, whether it be the county or the city. And the big problem is that to bring a roadway up to standard like that is an extremely expensive project and process that we simply don't have the money for. But I do know that Mayor Bielostowski has been meeting with state representatives. He had me brief our state Senate President Rob Wagner out of Lake Oswego. And just this week, we briefed State Rep Jules Walters of West Lynn. And Metro Councilor Christine Lewis is a part. She's a de facto member of our working group. She's a West Lynn resident. She's a non-voting member of our working group because of her affiliation with Metro. My point is the mayor has been working hard on gathering support at the state level, both locally and in Salem, so that as those conversations start to happen, we can speak realistically about what the finances look like in situations like that. So it's jurisdictional transfer is what we're really talking about, you know, giving us the highway or us taking the highway. And Eric's over there and Clark are probably choking and shaking their heads. No, I can't quite see that well. So those are outside of our project, but they are discussions that are happening.
Yeah. I think the thought is that once this plan is established, it'll give us an understanding with ODOT to say, look, here's what the future is, and it'll be a more realistic expectation of what it would take to bring that road up to what we envisioned.
I thought that I heard at one time, I believe the city of Portland negotiated with ODOT that they would take over jurisdiction of certain roads if ODOT brought them up to standards first, and then they would take them up.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. 82nd Avenue and some other areas. Matt probably knows more about that than I do. I think what we, you know, and, you know, I don't want to go through this too much, but the reality, and Eric's right, is for us to go out and ask for grant funding or various project fundings, we actually need a goal, an idea of what we're trying to accomplish. We can't just ask for money to go do stuff. They want to know what are we trying to get to. And so I think this in concert with our 2016 Highway 43, what was that called? Highway 43 concept plan. Those two things together really give us a very solid and complete plan for what we want that corridor to be, both physically on the infrastructure and then how we interact in and around it. So I think in the future, we're moving in that direction. But again, I think ODOT, well, they kind of have all the money and we don't. So, you know, that's kind of where that's at.
Chris, you raised an excellent point here. What part or role will the 2016 concept plan play in all this? Or is it just simply going to be set aside as it's just outdated?
No, not at all. I mean, Eric can probably speak to the plan itself, but the, you know, that, funding for that project was part of what the 2020 bond out of Metro that failed during COVID. So I know the document is still there. I believe it's still, you know, it's not outdated, but what we're working on is entirely separate. We're working on the land uses adjacent to all that. That plan was the physical infrastructure of the highway and how it interacts and you know, the physical space itself. We're talking about the things next to it for the most part.
Yeah.
Again, crosswalks has bubbled up to be one of the most talked about things in and around the highway. So yes, I realize that's technically infrastructure, but really we're talking about two separate plans, but we're using the 2016 document or the 2016 plan to help inform the Vision 43 project as we move forward. So.
All right, any further questions of Chris? Well, thank you very much, Chris. Very, very informative.
Thank you. Yeah, happy to come back at any time and give you guys an update. So thank you very much. Appreciate it. See you, Counselor.
All right, moving on then, the next item here would be the sidewalk infill and prioritization.
Yeah, and so if you all recall, the last several meetings we've been in and on and trying to figure out what to do with the sidewalk infill prioritization. What do? We change it? How does that work? I reached out to Kittleson They're happy to, who did the TSP, who came up with that list that we presented and discussed. So they're happy to take another look at the list of priorities for sidewalk infill projects. There, Matt can touch more on their strategy, but I think they have, you know, we can stick with the old prioritization rankings, or we can come up with something new. I think they have ideas, so I'll quit babbling and back and take it over.
Yeah, happy to jump in there. Thank you. I do have a presentation, and it's not terribly long, but the presentation is essentially designed to provide a little bit of background on the transportation system plan, and more specifically in the pedestrian plan that's an element of that plan. And part of the presentation also walks through how we went about prioritizing projects during that planning process, and what we would tentatively suggest, although again, these are very tentative suggestions about how we might revisit prioritizing projects in the future. Some of that is based on what you guys have probably heard by now is the climate friendly and equitable community rulemaking process. When is an updated Oregon's transportation planning rule, or the TPR, and a lot of the refinements to that overall statewide planning guidance document is really forms the basis for a lot of our recommendations. So happy to get into that a little bit more here as well. So Eric, do you want me to just push the presentation and get going on this?
Yeah, let her rip.
All right. Again, I'm having some minor connectivity issues here, but so if I disappear for a minute, I'll try to come right back. Here we get going. Let's see, do I want to share? Okay, I think you guys are just looking at yourselves now, but let's get the presentation. Okay, can everybody see the presentation?
Yeah, hang on one second.
Okay,
we can see you now.
Okay, great. All right, so I'm just going to kind of get, since we sort of went through introductions, we'll just get into it. But otherwise, again, really what we're talking about here is focusing in on the pedestrian system plan within the overall transportation system plan and thinking about ways to reprioritize those projects. So I'll just kind of skip over the agenda to keep the presentation brief. But in short, I want to provide you with a little bit of background information. I want to walk
you might be sharing the wrong screen.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Let me try that again then. There you go. Let me try that again. Okay, hopefully now you're seeing yourself again.
Yes, there we go.
And do you see the presentation?
Yes.
You should see a slide presentation slide that says what is the Westland Transportation System Plan.
Yep.
All right, great. So again, just to provide a little bit of background, the Westland Transportation System Plan, for folks that may not know or may be new to this type of a planning process, this is the city's long-range plan that identifies all the facilities and services needed to support growth over about a 20-year period. Your plan was adopted in 2016, although it has been updated at least two times that I'm aware of, as recently as 2021. So the current version will be a 2021 or 2016 amended by 2021. So it really focuses on priority projects, policies, programs for that 20-year period. Provides a vision for longer term projects that could be implemented should funding become available. Some of those things like the Highway 43 concept plan we were just talking about a moment ago. Provides guidance for development review decisions, capital improvement programming, and then has other folks have talked about, just efforts to obtain grant funding. So it's intended to be flexible, respond to changing community needs and various revenue sources. So again, we're focused on the pedestrian facilities. So the transportation system plan includes some pretty detailed information about the existing system, what types of facilities are out there today, where the gaps, deficiencies, and needs. And so I'll just, I can go through those kind of quickly here. So this is a map right out of your transportation system plan that shows where all your existing facilities are today. Mostly what you're seeing there in green are the sidewalks or partial sidewalks. Mixed in there, although it's a little harder to see, are going to be some of the pathways, some of the trails, and as well as where some of the marked designated crosswalks are located. Some of the needs that are shown here, this is just some of the needs that are highlighted in the transportation system plan as we're going through and trying to prioritize projects. First, I should mention that the TSP at this time frame, back when we did this in 2016, was really focused on arterials and collector streets, and then any other streets that may serve sort of a higher purpose, such as safe routes to school and things like that. So a majority of the focus of both the existing future conditions analysis as well as the projects are going to be on arterials and collectors. But again, there will be a few local streets in there when need be. So this is just showing where the gaps, deficiencies, and some of the future needs might be. So the solid red lines are anywhere where there's just no sidewalks, the dashes where there might be partial sidewalks, and then some of the places where we had heard through, mostly through community input, that there was a need for some enhanced pedestrian crossings. I'll just mention while I'm talking about enhanced crossings, those are, even though we just heard that that there's a strong need for enhanced crossings along Highway 43. Wouldn't argue that point, but it's generally speaking, Oregon Department of Transportation doesn't like us to include projects for enhanced crosswalks on their facilities. They like to take those one at a time and really let them be more like data-driven type of decisions. That has also evolved since 2016, so we'll get into that. So the next step was really to develop projects, and as we're developing projects for the TSP, we consider these four kind of key themes. One of them is essential destinations. So where do people need to go? Where do they like to go? So transit facilities, services, schools, parks, public facilities, commercial areas. These tend to be a focus of what we look at whenever we're developing projects, and ultimately down the road, you'll see prioritizing projects. Another thing we look at, because you're part of the part of Metro, Metro has what they call the regional pedestrian network. There's a hierarchy of streets within that network, everything from pedestrian parkways, which is that highest priority bed facility, down to regional pedestrian corridors and local pedestrian corridors, and then something that they call pedestrian districts. And I'll circle back on this in just a minute, but the pedestrian districts are generally aligned with the Metro 2040 centers, which have an increased emphasis in some of the new CFEC planning rules, which again, I'll get into in a moment. One of the other things is Clackamas County. So being part of Clackamas County does a lot of their planning at a fairly high level as well. And they have gone through and identified a number of routes. One of those routes that they refer to are their principal active transportation routes. So these are routes where Clackamas County wants to really emphasize connectivity for people that are both walking and biking, and so there's a strong emphasis on those. I was going to skip over a couple of these slides just to keep it brief here, but you can see the bright red ones are the highest priority, and they kind of work their way down. The green, what you have through part of Westland here, is what we would call a connector route or a connector principal active transportation route, pardon me. And you have a couple others you can see here and there that come up here in Lake Oswego and run down Willamette Falls Drive and then elsewhere through there. And then of course, we have, again, safe routes to school. So Westland currently has a number of safe routes to school plans some of them have been generated since the adoption of the transportation system plan. And so some of these just simply haven't been accounted for as we developed that original project list. So again, kind of at a high level, when we're thinking about when we're identifying the existing conditions, the gaps, deficiencies, and the needs, as well as where we should be identifying projects, we're considering those essential destinations, we're considering the regional and county level types of facilities and routes, and then we're considering all the local things like safe routes to school and who what. And I can't, and I'm sorry, I should have mentioned this early, but I can't see if anybody's raising their hand or like waving their arms here. So just please feel free to jump in if you have any questions. But I've only got about 3 or 4 more slides to go.
Nothing so far, so keep.
Okay. Great. So finally getting into the projects. So again, we develop projects to address all these gaps, deficiencies, and future needs. And this map that you're seeing here is the pedestrian plan projects. Very small again, but it's just a cutout of your transportation system plan. These are showing what your high, medium, and low priority projects are. It's hard for me to spot a low priority project on this map, but there are a good number. Anything shown in green is high priority, orange is medium priority, and then red being the low priority. But you can take a look at the TSP if you want to see where some of those projects fall. I talked about how these projects were developed. So this is how the projects were ultimately prioritized was going back, looking at the goals and objectives of the transportation system plan, developing a series of criteria based on those goals and objectives, and then evaluating them and scoring them. So you can see here what we did with goal 1, 2, and 3. We gave them a point system. We also added in concurrency and fiscal efficiency, gave them a point system. So a total point score of 64 was assigned to projects or potentially could be assigned to projects. And then you can see the next thing there, the breakdown was any of the projects were prioritized based on the number of points and then organized into high, medium, and low. High being anything over 30, medium 21 to 30, and low 0 to 21. So this goes back quite a ways, and I could provide a little bit more detail than that. But essentially, what I see when I think about this is that we had a planning process that that helped us to identify these point totals, that helped us walk through this scoring process, and helped us ultimately create this prioritized list of projects. Usually when we do this the first time around, we don't get it right. So we tend to rely pretty heavily on the city and the community to help guide us into a place where if one project isn't scoring particularly high enough, we try to understand why that's not scoring high enough, and maybe we'll tweak the scoring, we'll tweak the how we're potentially weighting the scores, or we'll modify things so that we can sort of start to see the outcome that we would expect, which that's why I see 22 points being assigned to safety and something like 6 points to equity. Just at the time, safety was a real high priority for folks, and some of the projects that had a lot of safety issues wanted to make sure that those were coming out on top. Similarly for access, and when we talk about access, some of my notes you might be able to see down here, we're talking about access to jobs, schools, healthcare, and so on and so forth. So a lot of different things go into that access piece. And then lastly, all the high priority projects and some of the medium priority projects found their way into the financially constrained plan. And as some folks are aware, the financially constrained plan is the plan that we would hope to accomplish over the 20-year period, usually sets the basis for system development charges for transportation. It's the list that makes its way up to Metro, and in some cases into the regional transportation plan, depending on the projects and the location of those. And again, I can't see if anybody's waving their arms, so just please jump in with any questions.
Keep going.
Okay. So the pedestrian plan projects, it's quite the list here. And just to give you a quick preview, I'll just say there's 104 projects on that list in total, broken up by segments, recorded as individual projects. Several projects could potentially be consolidated into a number of projects. And I think what I mean by that is when you look, a single roadway segment might have multiple projects on it. And that's just how we did it back in 2016 or so. Nowadays, we might refer to one single corridor, just depending on the corridor, and lump all the projects into that one corridor. So we have a big list that, we're working from here. A majority of the projects are sidewalk projects. There are a few study projects, you know, things that we want to look at a little bit closer, some interim projects. But you can see that overall majority, 73% are high priority, 25% are medium, and 2% are low. That's where you can't really spot them there. So this is the list, and I'm not expecting you guys to be able to read this, but the color coding is something the city put together for us, and this is going through the whole list and identifying the status of things as of March of 2024. So you can see anything shown in green or highlighted in green is complete. Anything in orange is partially complete. Blue is under construction. Everything else is incomplete at this stage. So just sort of scrolling through the list, you can see that there's a handful of things that are complete, a good number of things that are partial, a few that are currently under construction. But this is essentially the list that we're thinking about reprioritizing and thinking about different ways that we could approach that. So getting into the future, I've got a handful of hidden slides here. I'll provide you guys with this whole presentation so you can take a look at it. But essentially what I was going to give you is a little bit. Yeah, go for it.
Can you give us an example of a partially complete project or you know, the city folks here, perhaps just like, you know, because I'm kind of thinking like, is it, you know, maybe something that was identified on the plan as a 3-block long project and you got a block of sidewalk in or something like that, or
that is pretty accurate. Yeah, it'll be something like that. So anything on here, well, I'm not gonna say anything. A lot of stuff that's on here,
use Sunset Elementary as an example.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that was shown as partially is probably because it was in an area that was developed and we included it as part of the development project that they had to do our sidewalk. So it would not be the full run, like if it's something that's supposed to go 400 feet, it may have only covered 200 feet, or it might have only been on one side of the street, not both sides of the street. So it has some partial connectivity in there, but it doesn't meet the full scope of what was in the TSP.
Okay.
And those vary a little bit. We did, I mean, this is the list we did back in March, and we had our staff go out and kind of review everything in the field just to make sure, you know, they're pretty good compilation of what we've done, and they did their best in the notes on this to kind of describe what had actually been done versus what was planned to be done.
Sure.
Yeah. So it varies.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
Yep.
So again, I know I could spend a lot of time talking about the climate friendly and equitable community rulemaking process, but what I wanted to just highlight for you is that this is something that affects something that affects cities within metropolitan areas, including Metro, and it's sort of reframing how we think a lot about planning, transportation planning in particular, in these areas. And so Westland, of course, will be subject to these rules. Some of the other geographic things that are significant is anytime you have a 2040 center, that is another focus area. So on top of being an incorporated city within the Portland metro area, you have Metro 2040 centers, which makes sense. And so a lot of these new rules, you will be subject to these as you go through and update your transportation system plans. Most of the really challenging rules, I'll say, would only come into effect if you're doing a major transportation system plan update. But as what we're talking about right now, by reprioritizing the pedestrian plan projects, updating the list in the TSP would essentially be a minor TSP update. So we get to skirt underneath a lot of the rules. But I'll just highlight a couple for you real quick. 505 lays out So within the CFAC rulemaking or within the transportation planning rule, everything falls into Oregon Administrative Rule 660.012, and then it's all broken down and often referred to by the last four numbers here. So 0505 talks about the inventory and the requirements for the inventory. Some of you folks might be aware that ODOT is currently in the process of doing a fairly comprehensive inventory for all communities within these areas. So the city of Westland will get a full inventory of their transportation system, not just pedestrians, but ped, bike, transit, motor vehicle. You guys are going to get a full inventory sometime in the next couple of years. Hopefully some of you guys are at least aware of that process. That's currently underway, but it has a much more rigorous requirement for doing the inventory. Another thing that will come up eventually, 0155, has to do with how you're going to prioritize your overall system, how projects in that overall system are going to land in your financial constrained project list, which again works its way up to the regional transportation plan. And it has a lot of different considerations. But what I wanted to share with you guys, so skipping down here a little bit, and again, I'll send you the presentation so you can take a look at some of these in more detail, is within the 0520, so this is the bank of rules that really apply to pedestrian planning, they have a series of criteria that they'll want you to use as you're going through and prioritizing projects. And so the stepwise process for this is, one, developing a list of pet projects that would address all gaps, deficiencies in the system. The next step is to develop a project prioritization factors that are able to sort through the pedestrian system list, which is a lot of what we're doing right now. And then you're required to use these the following factors. And so I'll go through these one at a time. So the first one is anything within a climate friendly area or metro regional 2040 centers. So I mentioned that term a couple of times. You guys have a couple of these within the city, and so these will be areas of focus. This is where Metro, as well as the state and others, think that a majority of your growth is going to occur over the next 20-year period or so. And so they want to see a lot of investment in terms of infrastructure in these areas. I can't see you, but is everybody aware of where your regional 2040 centers are located?
That's what I'm looking at. Mark Richmond's area, right?
I'm sure we'll let the
district. No, we're not.
Yeah. So they're on, so it's kind of in the southwest corner of the city, over by where Willamette or Highway 43 meets up with Willamette Falls Drive, and then further west on not Willamette Falls Drive, but when you get further west, and my memory of the network is starting to fade a little bit. When you get over to that where the new school has been built, where you guys have that really cool park along the Tualatin, along the river there. You have a couple of them. They're just in two different locations.
Regional middle school. That's the regional center, or would it be along Willamette area, like historic Main Street?
You know, I can pull up a map here in a minute. We can take a look at it. I should have a map for you here, but
okay.
So the next one is concentrations of prioritizing investments in areas with concentrations of underserved populations. So the new transportation planning rule does define what they mean by underserved populations, and it includes, it's not just looking at low-income folks and minority folks, but looking at folks with disabilities, with limited access to motor vehicles, people that are over the age of 65, under the age of 17. So there's a variety of things that factor into that make it more reasonable to look at for City of Westland. Next, we have pedestrian safety risk factors, such as roadways with high speeds and high traffic volumes. There's a variety of other risk factors that fall into that category. Risk factors is a kind of a catchphrase in transportation planning, particularly for peds and bikes. And it really means a variety of different things. It can talk about things like functional classification, any sort of freight route designations, or any other types of designations you might have out there. Roadway width, roadway number of travel lanes. There's a variety of factors that play into this. But so that's just something else that we look at as we're looking at anything that has a particularly high risk for pedestrian safety, not entirely based on crash history, but just the various factors. Next is actually the crash history. So any area where there is a reported crashes involving pedestrians, serious injuries, or death. And then just a couple more here. One is access to key destinations. So you might remember this is an area that we focused on previously. So anything that will connect, fill gaps, and expand the existing pedestrian network. So getting back to that access. So investments that prioritize pedestrian travel consistent with the factors in 155. So that goes back up a couple of slides. Those are those overarching ones that talk about things like greenhouse gas emissions and whatnot. And then anything that helps implement a scenario plan as approved or a scenario plan. So this gets back to the regional planning network. So again, when we think about how we prioritize things in the current TSP, looking at things like safety, access, and equity, those things are in these new, largely in the new criteria from the transportation planning rule, where we're looking at safety risk factors, crash history. We're looking at underserved populations, and then again we're looking at some of these connectivity themes. So some consistency in how it was done before, but just adding a little bit more. Yeah.
I was just wondering when it's considered high speed.
In the pedestrian realm, generally anything 35 miles per hour and above.
Okay.
And that's not like a perfect measure, but I'm saying that partially because when we do a lot of things like when we're looking at crosswalk evaluations and anything below 35 miles per hour falls into one bucket, anything above 35 and above falls into another bucket. And that's similar when we're looking at like a variety of other considerations for street designations and whatnot. All right. And then my last slide here is something that I know we need to spend a little bit more time thinking through, but I also want to just think about funding. When we're talking about prioritization, I apologize. I should have backed up half a step. Even though these are the criteria that the transportation planning rule are recommending that we use as the basis for the prioritization, we can add other things. We can add, and this is kind of what we did when we were looking at the TSP previously, where we added fiscal responsibility. We can add a variety of other things in there. And so one thing that we were thinking about is funding and how some of these projects ultimately get funded. Something that we didn't do previously, and maybe Eric could probably talk to this better than I, is it didn't really speak to projects that could potentially be funded through private development. So there's a good number of projects that are on your list of 114 projects or so that are more than likely going to be funded through private development rather than funded through the city. And so we want to take into consideration funding, and particularly funding that could come from private developer. Next, we want to consider what some of your existing local funding mechanisms are. As you guys are all aware, street utility fees, transportation system development charges, and then specifically your bicycle or your pedestrian or bicycle system development charge. So you have different funding mechanisms to fund different types of projects with some specificity there for pedestrians and bicycles. I think I can hear somebody chatting.
Oh, you're good. Okay. I'm going to just ask if we have a bike and ped STC.
It's all included under our transportation.
So it's not broken out, so.
It is broken out.
Oh, it is broken.
Yeah, I mean, we break it out. It's all.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, it may go all into a pot in the same way, but when we assess an SDC, it does break out.
But it's simply the transportation SDC.
Yep.
That's the only way. Internally, you separate. Yeah,
got a bike and ped.
So
just the last thing here, state and federal grants, and there are a variety of grants that are available to fund pedestrian infrastructure. A couple just to highlight there's the Multimodal Active Transportation Fund. This is the Oregon Department of Transportation overall funding mechanism for pedestrian projects. Safe Routes to School, Oregon Community Paths, I believe both fall under that overall funding mechanism. Obviously, you guys have Safe Routes to School programs and could be eligible there. Oregon Community Paths, this is more for like your pathways and your trails and things like that. And then the state has their sidewalk improvement program, or what they call SWIP. Something to mention, and I know we chatted with this a little bit about with the city, is that things like Safe Routes to School and Oregon Community Paths, they place a lot of emphasis. I think Oregon Community Paths, if it wasn't this most recent round, it was the first round. It's only a couple of years old now. I think they weighted communities with some of these underserved populations very, very heavily. So if you didn't have if you weren't rating relatively high on what they call their transportation disadvantage index, you were likely not going to be getting this grant. And so City of Westland, I think in some cases just needs to be mindful about some of the grants that they go after, their ability to achieve these grants, just based on their demographics, and maybe target the grants that are more, you know, they're more likely to win. Because there are a lot of them out there, and some of them are going to be more catered towards other communities.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah.
I think Councillor Baumgartner has a question. Okay. Sorry if we missed you.
No, you're fine. Thank you. And wow, that's a great presentation. I hope it will be attached somewhere where we can access it later. Yeah. About that. That you brought up, the kind of high needs area. What about rent burdened? Is that because we are a 25% rent burdened community? Do they factor that in for need?
During the original TSP, that doesn't ring a bell, but it doesn't mean that it wouldn't be something we should focus on as part of this TSP. I do seem to remember during the previous TSP having some challenges with our demographic analysis and understanding the underserved communities within Westland. Again, this goes back to it was adopted in 2016, so it was more like 2014, 2015 when we originally did some of this work. But I think I should have mentioned as I was going through some of the things that I would be helpful for me to get from you folks. Is exactly one of those is a piece of insight that I want to make sure, as we're thinking about these underserved populations, if you could, if you have a sense for where those rent burdened areas are, and you could provide that information, that would be really helpful to us, because that's going to help really round out that demographic analysis piece and make sure that when we're thinking about emphasis or focus or prioritization, that those get included in there.
That's great. Because, and actually we have also a pretty significant aging in place population of people on fixed incomes. I mean, not to overstate this point, but it's kind of a pet peeve of mine how Westland is perceived wealthy, but there's a lot of people who don't exist because they're invisible, because they're not wealthy, but they're having to then suffer. So I'm trying to figure out ways to be. And I understand, I mean, I don't want to take money from a higher needs community, but I also want to make sure we're advocating and learning how to do that the best way and actually capturing the reality that there are quite a few people in Westland who would benefit from, say, active and alternate transit to cars.
Great.
I also had one other question. I'm sorry to hog the floor for a second. When you were mentioning the two, I'm sorry, what's the term? This city centers or what, two central?
The Metro's regional 2040 centers.
Yes, it's just for those listening, it's Central Village is the name of this, the area that you talked about that's near where 43 connects to Willamette Falls Drive. I mean, it's not right there. It's Central Village is where Market of Choice is, and near the library. The other one I believe I've heard is Main Street Willamette, downtown Willamette, which is, as you said, over kind of toward the direction of the new middle school, not quite that far. But my concern, and I'm curious to hear what your input would be, is that's a really main arterial going right through this center. And what do we need to do? How do we plan for that? Because it concerns me that we've got a lot of pass-through traffic that is driving right through our new or upcoming town center.
Are you referring to like Willamette Falls Drive or Highway 43 or both, I guess?
Well, I was talking about, well, really both. Yeah, it really is both.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. And again, this is still relatively new to a lot of folks. I think what your question is both of your 2040 centers are oriented around these relatively large, relatively busy corridors. And so how do those two things work together? I have yet to see how that's going to work, and partially because most of the places that I've been working in so far that have just these newly established, not 2040 centers, but what we're calling climate-friendly areas, are largely in undeveloped places and not necessarily on major arterials or corridors. So it's certainly something that we're going to be learning as we go along with this, and I think everybody in the metro area is going to be learning as they go along for the next 10, 15 years or so.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry, I don't have a better answer for you on that one.
Matt, you said you can add criteria to the criteria that's there, but does it, I assume it falls below the ranking of the criteria that exists, right?
So there's also the transportation planning rule does not provide a ranking for the criteria. And to the best of my knowledge and ability, I would say that we can provide that as a community. We can identify what of those criteria or what of those factors that they've identified for us are the higher priority.
Okay. Matt, could you repeat how the CFET rule then affects the pedestrian planning in terms of does it kick in when you're updating a TSP, or is this something that's mandated that needs to be done even outside of a TSP update? I didn't quite follow that part of it.
It's so there are two different, so the again the transportation planning rule highlights two different types of updates to your transportation system plan. One is a major update and the other one's a minor update. The major update is when you're some of the key considerations is pushing the horizon year further out. So right now I think yours is probably 2032. I'm going from memory there. But and you know, looking at doing new modeling, potentially moving projects into your very particular types of projects into your financially constrained project list. And there's a variety of other things. So the work that we're doing right now, again, would still fall into that minor TSP update, and we wouldn't really trigger the need to follow all the rules. And when I say all the rules, I would just, when it comes to pedestrians, there's an emphasis on these 2040 centers. There's an emphasis on schools. There is greater emphasis on not just arterials and collectors, but some other terms for like bike boulevards and other things like that. So there's more and more of the city is because it's like previously we just looked at arterials and collectors. Now more and more of the city is going to need to be part of these plans, and more and more of the projects are, you're probably going to see coming out of some of these areas that are, you know, we just probably didn't look at in 2014 or 2015.
Okay, any other questions?
So we were going to, just missed this in the beginning, we were going to ask for a revised pedestrian thing, but he's got this other thing you have to do. Are these happening together?
Well, that's what I was going to say, Matt. Maybe you can kind of roll this all into, like, what are the next steps and where are we headed here?
Yeah, I guess what I see is the next steps here would be for us to take a look at this list that the city had provided to us that identifies what projects are complete. So we can take those out of the project list. The projects that are partially complete, maybe we'll rethink how those are how those are identified or organized in the overall project list. We also had talked about identifying some potential projects, some potential interim treatments. So in areas where maybe you want some additional connectivity and where we may not want to go in with a full-on sidewalks on both sides, we can do something on a more interim basis. So highlighting some of those. And so once we get through that process, which feels like it'd be relatively brief, we'll go through and start reprioritizing the projects. And when I say reprioritizing the projects, really what I mean is going through and identifying the projects that fall on the projects that are within these underserved areas, like doing a little bit of a demographic analysis, finding what projects fall into those categories, looking at historical crash data, finding what projects are located along facilities with a history of pedestrian and bicycle. So going through that analysis piece and identifying where, how the individual projects are stacking up against that list of criteria. That's going to take a little bit more time. And then once we have that as sort of our baseline, we can come back and talk about how we, like, what the initial outcome is in terms of prioritization and how we might want to tweak things. I'll just say weight. So we can apply weights to the different criteria or different factors to make sure that we're creating an outcome that everybody's comfortable with.
Have a question. So if, as he updates this list, do we have updated traffic count for certain roads in West Linn that we can provide to be baked into the safety factor of the
some roads we do? Yeah,
because you know I'm just seeing a lot more traffic on certain roads in West Linn. I think, you know, that should be baked into the safety factor when you look at it compared to 2016.
We do have, so safety data is, Oregon Department of Transportation houses all the safety data for the state. And it is, it's pretty consistent and fairly comprehensive. It's all the reported crashes. So it does, we do miss out on some of that, but we have that data available. We also have sources, I mean, absent any, like things like intersection turning moment counts, tube counts, other things, we do have a rather large database of volumes that we can pull from. We also pull from a few sources that things like what there's this thing called Replica, folks might be familiar with, Iteris, and like a variety of other the big data sources that tell us where people are going, that are informing a lot of your like GPS navigation type of stuff. It's the stuff that if you knew where all your data was going to, it would creep you out a little bit. But all that data is available to us to tell us where where people are driving. So we have access to that data.
Thank you. This is great info, Matt. I guess I've got a question about, so this is a lot about prioritizing the projects that are identified, but I guess identifying projects that are on the list. Is there, you know, do the city have any kind of thoughts and desires to look at that?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but I think if we add different criteria plus look at things a little bit differently, other projects could score higher, correct?
Oh, definitely.
On the list.
I think the list, though, is complete with all the sidewalk needs, right? Is that your question?
That's kind of what it's getting at, you know. Yes, are we like, you know, we could say it that way. Is it complete for sidewalk needs? That would be kind of part one. And then it's maybe a little bit of a leading question of considering pedestrian facilities. And then that might not become the correct term, but considering the usage of our transportation facilities with kids ripping around on scooters and electric bikes and you know, and not kids doing it responsibly, kids not doing it responsibly, but, you know, and then also just people using those to take an e-bike to Safeway or something like that. And I know that's a whole nother thing, but you know. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's a whole
other question thing. Is what's the proper use of the pedestrian facility?
Partially. And you know, how do
does
we
everybody get to use it?
Does everybody get to use it? When is it, you know, yeah, there's a whole host of questions in there. It's like, when do we, you know, where do we want to encourage, you know, electric bikes, for instance, using in on sidewalks, on in bike lanes as part of the road, you know, in the traffic lane, you know, those types of things. And, you know, how do we kind of create a system that is great for everybody? Because those are going to be used and, you know, safe as well.
I thought the electric scooters, electric bikes, all those things are not allowed on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
They're not allowed on the sidewalks. They're supposed to be running on and taken on the in the bike lanes.
Yeah.
Well, I know bike lanes are considered a travel piece of
It's true. And we're gonna see, like, yeah, there's gonna be, you know, yeah, some of these can go 30 miles an hour plus. Some of them, you know, my kid has an electric scooter that's topped out at 15. I will totally tell them, do not take that thing on Pimlico, go on the sidewalk. And I will flip out at them, illegal or not, if I can't step on Pimlico and not on the sidewalk. You know, it's a good point, though.
Yeah.
It's totally true.
Yeah.
And it could be a bigger discussion than
right now,
it's just trying to, you know, yeah.
We can get back to those people that came to see us a long time ago that wanted the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Trying to get to that point.
Right.
So I think it's a great question, and maybe just to repeat it back, but I heard at least three things in there. One is, have we accounted for all the right, let's call them all the right projects? Like, do we have all the right facilities accounted for in our project list? Do we have the right facility types for the different facility? And then do we have the right policies in place to make sure that people are using them accurately or correctly? And I think maybe the first one is one that we feel some level of confidence about, because we know we have at least all the arterials and collectors. We know we have a number of your safe routes to school plans, so the local streets there are accounted for. We do feel like we have a fairly comprehensive list, but there's going to be others that we don't have. There's going to be streets that have, like you say, become busier over time that are probably not accounted for in the current list. The question about facility type, I'm just speculating here, some communities have moved towards different types of bike facilities in particular. They've moved away from like the on-street bike lane adjacent to the travel lane and kind of gone to some, in some cases, like an elevated bike lane separated by a curb, so on and so forth. They've also made some changes in terms of how the sidewalk is designed and oriented relative to the bike lane and other facilities. So that feels like a much bigger process that would probably require a lot more community input and consideration to how the city's been doing it for years and years, because you want to be able to make those transitions accurately. And the last one feels like a policy question, which again would probably be a bit beyond this project and something that a lot of communities need to know how to deal with. Still haven't figured out how to deal with scooters. I think they're tapering off a little bit, but yeah, a lot of communities haven't figured that out. I think we're gonna have to play the first one a little bit by ear and see how that shakes out when we have the final list of priorities, if we've got the right projects accounted for. And I'm kind of looking at Eric, I'm kind of looking at you and Clark, and making sure that we're looking at that, we've looked at this list and feel confident when we get it finalized that it reflects what we want to see out there on the streets.
Okay, Matt, do you have a sense of time frame in terms of these steps that you mentioned, and when you think you'll have a preliminary or initial list, reprioritization list?
Eric, I think we're shooting for the end of the year. Is that right? To have everything wrapped up. So the initial one, we'd work backwards from there and try to find a good time frame to get that over to you guys. think your next meeting is in a couple of months.
October.
So, yeah, we may just try to use that meeting as our next time frame to get things wrapped up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Some sort of a draft list to look at.
Yeah. Okay.
Then we can talk about we want to relink things.
Right. All right. Wonderful. All right. Anything further on this? Just on this area. It's good stuff.
Right. Yeah. Just and this is going to be available this presentation somehow.
Yeah. We'll get it.
We can sell it. We have all of this, right, Matt?
Will you send it, Matt?
Yeah, I do have a slightly updated version that I'll shoot over to you guys here in just a little bit, assuming it'll get out the door.
Okay.
Great.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Sorry, that took so long.
No.
Takes the weight off our shoulders. We were fumbling.
Well, yeah, when you started getting into the tendencies of the TSB and all the scoring and how we weren't going to be able to get it done.
No. Great. Okay, well, let's keep moving then. We're on to our next agenda item, which is the general capital project updates, and we have 10th Street project closeout on the list here.
Yeah, so lots of project we're wrapping up for summer, some development here, but some capital, 10th Street, Salamo. We have another walkthrough tomorrow. Hopefully we're almost there. Punch list and get that thing accepted and then into the warranty period. You might have saw weeks ago we had it closed to do some redos. Some of it was just workmanship, it got damaged over time for the traffic. So we're dealing with that. I think we're gonna some of it landscape restoration will go into the fall when we have a little bit cooler water weather.
For hopefully detour gone now.
Yeah.
Oh, it's open.
Yeah, everything's open up.
Yeah. And then nobody has any questions on that one. Moving farther out, we talked about AP Creek and Fields Bridge Park. That work is ongoing. We do have curb, and if anybody has driven out there recently, but there's curbs, street side, and facelift paving throughout is rough because they're dodging manholes and various inlets and so on, which hopefully keeps people driving slower. They are trying to get the sidewalk and the bike path completed in a couple of weeks and then hopefully pave
last week of September.
So
I actually happened to drive by there today, so it looks like it's some stretches it's going to the sidewalk's going to be curb tied in, and other places is that going to be a landscape strip in between? There's
some of it there. There is, we do suck it in, and there is no landscape strip, I believe.
Correct.
It's bike lane and then sidewalk.
It's a bike lane.
Yeah, it'll look just like Main Street.
It's the
same concept that we've been doing. Rosemont.
All right. I wasn't quite sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely come along.
Cedar Oak, we touched a little bit on Safe Routes to School. We finally got that one done. That was one of the 2018 geo bond projects.
That's all done?
Almost.
The all the sidewalk is in. They're working on their stormwater planters right now. They resurfaced the whole road last week. Mm-hmm. So they're doing some final grading work. It's open to walk on now. Striping will be first week of September, we'll do final striping. And then again, we'll come in and do some more planting.
Flash RFP.
RFP, yeah, this next week as well.
Hmm.
Next week, yeah. Barry.
Thanks. So about specifically the design of the, I guess it's where it terminates, the curb. If you go left onto, is it Trillium, right there at the edge of the school property? It seems kind of dangerous to have that raised curb just blocking forward progress. Why does it terminate like that? I've never seen that before.
Are you talking about at the school, on the school corner, or on the other corner?
No, it's just the new sidewalk on either side of the street, but at where that road comes in.
Because it terminates at our ADA ramp. That's probably why it looks that way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And part of that, Mary, I was out there, I think, a week or so ago. Since it's not striped yet, it does look a little odd. Once we stripe it, the outside, like, white lines will direct you away from that kind of abrupt end to the curb ramp.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks a little odd now. I think it will look better when it's striped. But that's
all right.
I think I understand your question. I think that's what it is, because I saw it as well.
Okay. Yes, you're right. It's not done. So I should do that thing where people wait and they don't wait until it's all done and they say, wait a minute. So point taken.
The shift in the intersection there also has made it a little odd because it's we realigned Trillium to be in the center of the right of way where it's always hugged. And so now it kind of has this sweep to it as you come out of it that will look odd again until it's not striped and then more normalized.
Okay. Thank you.
The other road. Burns. I mean, that's fine.
Burns is open.
Yeah.
That was a developer. Yeah, that was a developer one. I don't think we have any other.
We got A Street closed for those two houses. Oh, yeah. Well, it's not closed, but it's tons of workers ahead. It's like, must be fun with the school in session.
Kind of bad. Yeah, they're built. I mean, that's another developer project. That's like 8 townhomes being built right there. But yes, there are always constructed vehicles in the parking lane and signs up all the time. So I think they were probably hoping they would be closer to completion before school started.
I really like that the road projects that are going on is in the Westland Weebly updates that come out. That's really nice. It's good communication.
We're trying.
Yeah, that's great.
We're trying to add things when we know closures that are or interruptions that are caused by people other than ourselves. We got a lot of utility work going on that going to need a little bit of lane closures here and there. We're trying to put those in as well so people are aware of what's going on. Like Eric says, we are trying.
That's funny. Good communication.
Super. All right. Takes us to board discussion announcements. Does anyone have anything they want to bring up? Any announcements they want to make? Have none myself? Nothing. All right. Well, then our next meeting.
I have one. I just wanted to give a shout out to the new bus route. Has anybody ridden on the bus?
I thought that the new one, I thought starts September 1. I thought I saw that posted.
No, it started last week.
Started. Oh.
Yeah.
Started?
I mean, I haven't ridden it, but I just.
No, we haven't tried it, but it doesn't.
All right.
Interesting. Hopefully
maybe we should have a group advisory board bus party.
Well, let's take a ride to Lake Oswego and downtown Portland and back and see how long it takes.
It's going to be a lot faster than what you want.
Right.
That was done now.
Yeah, so
that was a deal.
Yeah.
I'll take that trip and report back. How about that?
Okay.
All right. All right, I think we're finished then, right? Okay, then I will declare our meeting adjourned, and we will meet in October in 2 months.
Thanks, Barry. Hey, Greg.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye bye.
Good night.
Stop that bus service.